Versatime. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Russian President Vladimir Putin is denying allegations that documents leaked from a Panamanian law firm contained evidence of corruption among his closest associates. Speaking Thursday to a media forum in St. Petersburg, Mr. Putin described the so-called Panama Papers as part of a Western campaign to undermine Russia. Mr. Putin noted that he himself is not mentioned in the documents. Bahrain Foreign Minister Khalid bin Ahmed Al Khalifa Thursday said Iran needs to change its foreign policy in the region and stop weapons shipments and training terrorists. He said Iran should stop financing and supporting what he called proxies. The comments indicate the ongoing concerns of a number of countries about what they view as Iran's destabilizing behavior in the region. The minister spoke during an appearance with visiting U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Earlier, Kerry held a series of talks on regional security issues with officials from the Gulf Cooperation Council. Belgian police have released a new video of a man wanted in the recent Brussels airport bombing. The video was taken just minutes after the March 22nd bombing, and it shows the apparent getaway of the third surviving suspect, often identified in the media simply as the man with a hat. The Brussels airport attacks, along with a bombing at a commuter rail station, killed 32 people and wounded more than 340. The two U.S. Democratic presidential candidates, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, are feuding over who is qualified to be America's next leader. The two traded contentious barbs Thursday, even though they made a nominal effort to cool the rhetoric between them. This is VOA News. UN Special Envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, says he plans discussions with Syria's government and opposition parties next week. He hopes to start Syria's political transition process. Lisa Schlein has a report.
UN Special Envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, says the next round of Syrian peace talks will resume next week. But he is a bit vague as to the starting date. He says that is the beauty of having what he calls flexible proximity talks. Since the warring parties refuse to meet face-to-face, the UN envoy shuttles from one delegation to another. Therefore, he says, it is not necessary for all the delegations to be present at the same time. He says he expects staggered arrivals to begin early next week, with earnest negotiations set for April the 13th. Lisa Schlein, Geneva.
U.S. President Barack Obama used an appearance at the University of Chicago's law school Thursday to criticize Republicans in Congress for refusing to consider his recent Supreme Court nomination. He told a town hall meeting that by failing to consider his nomination of Merrick Garland to fill a seat of the late Antonin Scalia, Republicans risk eroding the integrity of the judicial branch and of causing the American people to lose confidence in the court. Voters in Djibouti go to the polls Friday to elect a president. President Ismail Omar Guelleh is expected to win his fourth term in office. He faces six challengers. Growing pressure from a resurgent al-Shabaab in Somalia is prompting the United States to respond with airstrikes. Jeff Selden has more.
Under increased pressure from Somali troops and forces from several African countries, the Islamist militant group al-Shabaab has found a way to strike back. General David Rodriguez with U.S. Africa Command.
The pattern has been that they gather and train a significant number of people, and then they disperse and attack and focus all that energy on one of the forward operation bases of the troop contingent countries.
The U.S. AFRICOM commander says al-Shabaab's operations have made the al-Qaeda affiliate more vulnerable, providing U.S. aircraft with better targets. Jeff Selden, The Pentagon.
A student activist has been murdered in Bangladesh by a group of machete-wielding attackers. Postgraduate law student Nazimuddin Samad was hacked with machetes and then shot by motorcycle-riding assailants as he was returning from class Wednesday at Jamaat University.
The United States strongly condemns the barbaric murder of Nazimuddin Samad, a law student who was apparently killed for speaking out against violent extremism in Bangladesh.
That's U.S. spokesman Mark Toner. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi and the African Union to soon sign an agreement over human rights concerns.
We have always said that much of what has been said is pure narrative and has no match with the reality. But we have also said that we are not closed to any kind of cooperation with the international organizations that deal with the issue of human rights.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. U.S. lawmakers warn against shortchanging Ebola to fight the Zika virus. The U.S. ramps up airstrikes on the resurgent Al-Shabaab. We'll have a report on life after Boko Haram captivity, and Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe reassures war veterans of his government's continued support.
The war veterans were inching to meet their patron, and the war veterans were also happy because they were in a position to articulate their feelings, their aspirations, how they want the party to be run, and so forth.
That's ZANU-PF activist Gazira Chirumanzu, and Malawi tries to crack down on albino killings. Those stories plus Mark Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi is to sign a memorandum of understanding with the African Union following concerns the government is violating the rights of its citizens. Burundi's foreign minister, Alain Nyamitwe, denies accusations that his government uses state security agencies as well as supporters to violate the rights of its citizens. Nyamitwe tells reporter Peter Clotty the Burundian government is committed to protecting the rights of its citizens regardless of their political affiliation.
There's an ongoing engagement between Burundi and the international community, let's put it that way, vis-a-vis the issue of human rights. We have always said that much of what has been said is pure narrative and has no match with the reality. But we have also said that we are not closed to any kind of cooperation with the international organizations that deal with the issue of human rights. So I, again, don't understand that while we are using the language of openness, others are in the business of blackmailing the government.
Mr. Nyamitwe, you use the word blackmail. Opposition groups are saying that the government in Bujumbura talks a good game and that they say one thing to the international community and another when it comes to the street and comes to the respect of their rights and all that. And that the government only shows these monitors what the government wants them to see, irrespective of what goes on the ground. What is your reaction to that?
Leave them. Leave them because they do not know what they are talking about. These are the same people who were the ones to ask the Security Council to get involved in Burundian affairs. Now that the Security Council has come up with a resolution, they are the very first people to reject the resolution. So they do not know what they are doing. They do not know what they are talking about. Leave them.
What has been the cooperation with the international monitors, particularly the African Union monitors, who are on the ground looking at the issues of the rights and, the issues of respecting rights or violations thereof that your accusers or critics have always said. What is the cooperation between the government and these groups?
As far as we are concerned, the cooperation is okay. Now, it is up to the monitors themselves to say whether they are satisfied or not and in which ways we can improve that cooperation. The reality is we have opened the borders to them. They are here. And the numbers are going to increase up to 100 as far as human rights monitors are concerned and 100 for the military experts. And we, either tomorrow or in the next 2 days, are going to sign the MOU that binds the government and the African Union on that particular matter. So I believe that there's no problem as far as we are concerned now. It is up to the AU monitors, to the AU military experts to tell that, they're part of the story. But as far as we are concerned, we've done our best. I mean, there's no best that we could have done than what we have done so far.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Bujumbura. Growing pressure from a resurgent Al-Shabaab in Somalia is prompting the United States to respond with more airstrikes. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden has more from the Pentagon.
Under increased pressure from Somali troops and forces from several African countries, the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab has found a way to strike back. General David Rodriguez with U.S. Africa Command.
The pattern has been that they gather and train a significant number of people, and then they disperse and attack and focus all that energy on one of the forward operation bases of the troop contingent countries.
In the deadliest attack, Shabab fighters in January assaulted a base held by Kenyan troops, killing up to 200 soldiers.
That has had a negative impact on the troop contributing countries because they have lost significant people in multiple types of these attacks.
But the U.S. AFRICOM commander says al-Shabaab's operations have also made the al-Qaeda affiliate more vulnerable, providing U.S. aircraft with better targets. Just last month, a U.S. airstrike killed more than 150 newly trained al-Shabaab fighters at a camp about 195 kilometers north of Mogadishu. Better intelligence is also helping, resulting in an airstrike last week that killed a regional head of al-Shabaab's security and intelligence wing. Jeff Selden, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Boko Haram has kidnapped and conscripted thousands of young men and women since 2013. Nigerian and Cameroonian troops continue to liberate captives by the hundreds, but those formerly held by Boko Haram say their struggles are far from over. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the Minawo refugee camp in northern Cameroon.
Where is his senior brother?
He said, after when he registered, he
ran. United Nations staff and Cameroonian soldiers question and search refugees arriving at the Minawawo camp. 21-year-old Hamidu Muhammad says he was seized from the Nigerian town of Kumshi 3 years ago.
Kundeje dun pila in harodo wakati man Boko Haram wari haurodo farti yumbe.
He says Boko Haram forced him and his three brothers to join them. Those who tried to escape were killed. He says the fighters attacked schools and markets and ordered him and others to transport stolen food and goods to Boko Haram camps in the bush. He says the militants attacked farmers, cattle ranchers, and businesses. Mohammed arrived unarmed and is cooperating with the military. The military says anyone caught with weapons is arrested and charged before a military tribunal. But others who hand themselves in, like Mohammed, are held in special camps for investigation. VOA was not allowed to visit any of those camps. Former captives say they are being met with stigma and suspicion. Elias Yeager has been at the Minawawo camp for 2 years.
Sometimes we got problem because we call them Boko Haram sometimes. They will catch them and carry to the security here.
18-year-old Hassan Imra came to Minawawo after regional troops raided the Boko Haram camp where she had been held for 2 years. She says Boko Haram fighters forced them and their children to camps. She says the boys were used as domestic workers and taught how to operate guns and explosives. She says the women and girls were used as sex slaves and forced to cook for the fighters. She wiped tears from her face as she spoke and held her crying 16-month-old baby in her arms. She said she doesn't know who the father is. Alain Vogo, Cameroon's senior military official in the area, says traumatized refugees are getting counseling and other special attention.
Nous leur apportons du soutien tant en ce qui concerne les problèmes de santé.
He says the military is working with humanitarian groups to take care of their health needs and provide them with food when possible. He says the global objective is to free all those who have been held in bondage by Boko Haram and bring back peace to their communities. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Minawawo, Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, the 8th day of April 2016. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on our affiliate station, Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe war veterans met on Thursday with President Robert Mugabe and made several demands, including a call for the president to allocate more ministerial positions to former freedom fighters. Some Zimbabweans had expected war veterans to ask the 92-year-old president to retire after almost 36 years in power, but the former freedom fighters focused mainly on their welfare and related matters. For perspective, reporter Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe program spoke with ZANU-PF activist Gazira Chirumazu and political commentator Charles Mutase. First, Chirumazu says the war veterans were happy about the outcome of the meeting with President Mugabe.
The war veterans were itching to meet their patron, and the war veterans were also happy because they were in a position to articulate their feelings, their aspirations, how they want the party to be run and so forth. In short, I would say everybody was happy, more than happy.
Mr. Mtasa, do you think so?
I don't think so. Meeting does not constitute happiness. And what he is calling articulation of issues, these are issues that have been in the public domain. And everybody knows that these people have been complaining about the same issues that they raised today. What could have made them happy is if he had said, this is how we are going to address A, B, C, D. But promising and promising does not constitute happiness.
Now, indications, Mr. Chirumazu, is that the war veterans were demanding more ministerial positions. Is that fair?
No. I think you must maybe have, you know, quoted them wrong. They never said they want ministerial positions, but they said, according to the ideology of ZANU-PF, the way they fought for this country, they prefer key ministerial positions to be in the domain of war veterans because they will be in a position to deliver. They did not say they want all the what. All, remember, we have got the youth wing. We have got the women's league. So it will be, you know, bad for the war veterans to come up with such a suggestion. This is why I am saying you must have quoted them wrongly.
What do you think, Mr. Mdas?
Yeah, is that not speaking to the problem of factionalism in the party? Because everyone who is a minister now, I think he deserves by virtue of qualification to be one. And we don't think those people are outside the party. Why would 36 years down the line the war veterans start demanding for those positions that they could have demanded for earlier on?
And there were expectations, Mr. Chirumazu, that maybe the war veterans were going to tell the president to rest a little bit after ruling for almost 36 years. What happened?
No, you see, it is only those people who are not within ZANU-PF structures to think of that. Remember, the structures of ZANU-PF also includes the war veterans. And President Mugabe was overwhelmingly voted to be the president of ZANU-PF, the last Congress. So it is only the imagination of those who do not know how ZANU-PF works.
ZANU-PF activist Gazira Chirumazu. You also heard independent political analyst Charles Mutase. Both spoke with reporter Gabe Dube of VOA Zimbabwe program. U.S. lawmakers and international health officials are warning against siphoning funds for Ebola in order to fight the Zika virus, one day after the Obama administration announced plans to do just that. VOA's Michael Bowman reports the continuing dangers and challenges Ebola poses were the focus of a Senate hearing on Thursday.
Ebola killed more than 11,000 West Africans in 2014 and 2015 and remains a threat, according to Democratic Senator Ed Markey.
While new cases of Ebola have been dramatically reduced, Ebola is not over, and the conditions that made it an epidemic persist.
On Wednesday, the White House announced it will redirect nearly $600 million in funds, much of it from Ebola resources, to fight the Zika virus, which is spreading rapidly in the Americas. The move is short-sighted, according to Sophie Delaunay of Doctors Without Borders.
If it's about shifting from one priority to another, then it's worrying because this is one of the lessons that we learned from Ebola, that we need to be prepared. It's going to come back.
The Obama administration says it is forced to shift funds from Ebola to Zika because Congress has not approved a $1.9 billion request to respond to the mosquito-borne disease. Even so, Republican Senator Jeff Flake said Ebola must not be ignored.
The epidemic decimated already weak health care systems in the three affected countries. It also has continued to wreak havoc on their economies, complicating recovery for governing institutions and hampering a return to normalcy.
Democrat Chris Coons noted that Ebola is far from eradicated.
There is an animal reservoir of Ebola that has probably been active in West Africa 40 years, we've now discovered. There have probably been a whole series of small outbreaks in remote villages that the rest of the world never knew about. And there is, of course, the opportunity, the possibility that this virus will mutate.
Health officials urged lawmakers to embrace a comprehensive approach to fighting epidemics rather than piecemeal funding as emergencies arise. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
In Malawi, police are searching for a one-year-old girl taken from her home last week. The girl is the latest victim in a wave of abductions and attacks targeting albinos, whose body parts are highly sought after on the regional black market. The threat has become so acute that Malawi's president gave a national address this month pledging action. Lamek Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
In central Malawi, a mother woke to find that her baby daughter had been snatched from her side during the night. Eddie Nanzingu is the police spokesperson for Kasungu District.
So she shouted for help. When the neighbors came, they tried to search for the baby, but they could not trace her.
The spokesperson told VOA the day after the abduction that the arrests are imminent, but could give no further details. The abduction came a month after a nine-year-old albino boy was found beheaded in eastern Malawi. Earlier this month, President Peter Mutharika addressed the nation.
This is evil and a threat to the most fundamental human rights in our constitution. Let me assure you that government is taking serious steps against this criminal behavior and will overcome this. We have intensified surveillance and investigations in the affected districts and the country as a whole.
Mutharika called specifically on the judiciary to issue stiffer penalties to the culprits. People with albinism and absence of pigment in their skin, hair and eyes are targeted in Malawi and other parts of Africa because many people falsely believe that potions made from their body parts will bring good luck and wealth. Those involved are not often found or prosecuted, and when they are, the penalties are often criticized as too lenient. Last year, a court in southern Malawi ordered a man found with albino body parts to pay a fine of $30. He was charged with possessing human tissue, which carries a maximum sentence of 3 years in jail. Police have recorded at least 50 attacks on albinos in the past 3 years. The attacks have sparked both outrage and fear. Ian Simbota is a journalist with albinism working for the state-run Malawi Broadcasting Corporation.
When I am even working late, I always think of my life when I go out. I always think of what will I do if I come in such kind of situation. So it's like you're living in somebody's country, yet you're a citizen.
The majority of albinos have been in Majinga District near the border with Mozambique, where the body parts are reportedly being sold to witch doctors. In 2015, the government created a task force composed of police, traditional and religious leaders, and a local albino association to address the attacks. The strategy was to identify the homes and the schools of people with albinism and check in on them regularly. However, the president of the Association of People with Albinism in Malawi, Boniface Massa, says the task force no longer functions due to lack of funding.
And as a result of the task force being dormant, and this, that's what has led to like the restart of the attacks on people with albinism. All what we are saying is the political will, the effort by the police must really translate in the actual ending of the attacks.
Massa says Malawi should follow Tanzania's lead and ban witch doctors as a way to cut off demand for human body parts. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with football. Guinea-Bissau is the world's most improved national team, while Cape Verde Islands has slipped by the widest margin among African teams, according to the FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday. Algeria regained the top spot as Africa's highest-ranked nation. They are at 33rd. African champions Ivory Coast are 34th and Ghana 38th. Senegal is 43rd and Egypt 44th. Cape Verde Islands and Tunisia share 47th spot. The Democratic Republic of Congo is 51st, Guinea 58th, and the Republic of Congo 59th. Meanwhile, Senegal host African champions Nigeria Super Falcons in Dakar as Algeria welcome Kenya to Algiers in the 2016 Africa Women's Cup of Nations qualifiers today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Botswana is at home to South Africa in Lobatse, some 80 kilometers south of the Botswana capital, Gaborone. On Sunday, in the return leg of their tie, Zambia welcome Zimbabwe to Lusaka as Equatorial Guinea are at home to Mali in Malabo. In Nigeria, the federal government of Nigeria will not foot the salary for a foreign coach for the Nigeria Super Eagles, Sports Minister Solomon Dalungwe clarified in Abuja. The Nigeria Football Federation head, Amaju Pinnick, is on record as saying they will seek a foreign coach for the Super Eagles after they failed to qualify for the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations. The NFF received more than 95% of its funding from the federal government of Nigeria. They will have to find private sponsors if they want a foreign coach as they prepare to resume their 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifiers. Moving on to cricket, Afghanistan host Namibia in a three-day ICC Intercontinental Cup tie at the Greater Noida Cricket Stadium on the outskirts of the Indian capital New Delhi starting on Sunday. The Afghan cricket authorities have adopted the venue for their home matches in view of the security concerns back at home. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, April 8th.
This is Bapa Adamare Fota from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria. The incumbent governors of Adamawa State, it is high time that you should do everything possible to resuscitate our fainted educational system, more especially at the primary level. In a situation whereby the living condition of teachers is not put into consideration, the problem will not be solved. Feeding of the pupils will not solve the problem. Improve the welfare of the teachers is better. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir says he will step down when his current term is over 4 years from now. In an interview with the BBC, he said his job is exhausting and he will not be a candidate in the next presidential election. That is it for this Friday, April 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou discusses diabetes, a big public health issue with the number of patients hit a four-fold rise since 1980. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Else chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.